show. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! It is, by Jove, it is Tuesday. It is the 12th of June, 2012. This is The Horn. I'm Bob Kincaid, headonradionetwork.com. A little thing we like to call conversation radio, available only on the series of tubes. If someone tries to bring you The Horn via a big truck, don't trust them. Internet-only broadcasting for... going on 7 years? Hard to believe, isn't it? And some of you have been with us for almost that entire time. Some of you have been with us for that entire time. We are all the members of the Horn family. And it's a mighty pleasant little family of which to be a member. We are listener-supported. We are supported by the kind contributions of the people who share their time and their ideas to keep this all going. There is a contribution button at headonradionetwork.com, as is the snail mail address. Both of them work equally well. And we are much appreciative for all that goes toward keeping this little experiment in the First Amendment going. This little experiment in perhaps not the First Amendment, but certainly freedom of expression. With caveats. We offer no freedom of expression here to right-wingers. They are expressly not welcome. It's one of the nice things I think you can count on in tuning into the Horn. You don't have to run the risk of listening to some knuckle-walking, mouth-breathing, snake-handling, floor-rolling, strychnine-swigging, right-wing religion industry freak when you tune in here. They ain't welcome. Just goodbye now. Right? Right. Why? Is that because I get my jollies suppressing... No. It's because they're idiots. It's because we have learned for, yea, verily, something on the order of 25 years now, that they have, if not longer, if not an entire generation, if not going back into the 1960s with the weird little John Birchers and the Alan Stang report. Think about it. That they have nothing to offer the body politic. They have absolutely nothing to offer in terms of the considered or good faith creative solutions for going forward into a future that utterly refuses to be the mythological past that the right wing so yearns for. So don't come here thinking you're going to get to hear some right winger talking about how there's a race of men who live in the trees, and I say, I live all night for calls like these. Thanks for calling. No, it ain't going to happen. What you're going to hear here is a broad spectrum and a wide variety of folks from around the country, all of whom share the common idea that this country is worth saving. It's in pretty bad shape right now. And it's not in bad shape because of anything progressives or liberals did. It's in bad shape because it's been put this way. I was thinking along these lines when I received an email earlier this evening. From our buddy Ron in Raleigh. He says, a couple of weeks ago, I was let go from the temp position that was supposed to become permanent. Oddly enough, I was the oldest worker on the job. Age discrimination, you ask? Since that day, I've had more time to read and absorb current affairs, Bob. Things are bad and getting worse, not for the elites, just for folks that actually have to work for a living. One article I read was concerning wage theft. Wage theft has nothing to do with low-wage employees stealing from employers, just the opposite. Well-to-do corporations such as Walmart are stealing from their low-wage employees. The shorting of hours, making workers work through breaks, not paying final hours once workers are terminated. Don't forget working workers off the clock after they've clocked out at the end of their shift, Ron. The corporations are free to do so because there is no pushback from the government, and, of course, no union pushback because unions have been gutted. Millions of dollars are being stolen from the people that can least afford it, and you know where that largesse is going. Another article notes that family net worth has declined to the level of the 1990s. I think 1992, to be precise. I saw that statistic earlier today myself and couldn't help reflecting, why, yes, yes, that would be just as America was emerging from its long national nightmare of 8 years of Ronnie Reagan followed by 4 years of Pappy Bush. Ron continues, median net worth has gone from $126,400 in 2007 to $77,300 in 2010. Income has declined by 7.7% over the same period. How are we supposed to survive when income is going backwards and the cost of everything we need to live continues to increase in cost at a frightening pace? In my local paper today was an article that could be the death knell for a great many people. The article concerns the impending merger of Duke Power and Progress Energy. If these two companies merge, they'll be the only choice for 7.1 million consumers in a dozen states and some localities in Latin America. What the hell is the DOJ's antitrust division doing? 1,860 jobs at the corporate level up in smoke. I'm sure you can guess the alleged reason for the merger. Economies of scale. $1 billion in savings in the early years of the merger. My favorite, not charging customers for the cost of the merger, including $250 million of severance pay. Ron in Raleigh closes saying, please, if you've heard anything positive that is happening for the working class in America, let me know. This ledge seems to be getting narrower. Well, I wish I could. I'd love to. I'd like to tell you that somewhere in America there's a little workers' paradise. But there ain't one. Everywhere in the United States, working people are desperately clinging to whatever few and diminishing rights they have. There is nowhere in the United States where the rights of workers are expanding. Nowhere. I mean, think of it. You tell me. Are workers' rights expanding in Alabama? Are they expanding in Florida? Are they expanding in Massachusetts? Or Michigan? Or Minnesota? Or Wisconsin? Is it getting better in California? Is it getting better in Oregon or Washington? Is it getting better in Missouri or Kansas? Hawaii? Alaska? Guam? Puerto Rico? The Marianas Protectorate? No. That one statistic that Ron mentioned, and I just kind of slapped myself on the forehead in that sort of the you know, I could have had a V8 motion. Another article notes that family net worth has declined to the level of the 1990s. Median net worth has gone from $126,400 in 2007 to $77,300 2010. That means in the space of 3 years, median net worth lost almost $50,000. Imagine what that was like for people on the way underside of that 126.4, or on the way underside of that 77,003. But it was lost, right? Median net worth has gone from 126.4 in 2007 to 77.3 in 2010. It was lost. That $50,000 per median household was lost. Or was it? Or was it? Was it lost? Or was it stolen? Because things like median net worth don't just jingle through a hole in your pocket and wind up sort of forming a breadcrumb trail of coins as you amble down the sidewalk looking for work. No, it goes somewhere. Now, where do you suppose it went? Anybody? Come on, it's just like Romper Room. I can see the little hands out there. Yeah. They, come on, want it all. They want it all. And they are damn sure not above taking it. And they done did. When we see median net worth in America just sort of disappear like that in 3 years' time, remember, nothing ever happens on Wall Street but somebody's there making a buck on it. And when that median net worth was lost, people got rich. We tend to forget in watching the demise of financial institutions during the meltdown that there were people who got fabulously rich watching our economy revert to its ash state. Somebody's got all those $50,000 in his or her pockets. All those $50,000 are financing some lobster lunches. Because a lot of people got rich, not poor, on credit default swaps, on derivatives. Yeah, Ron in Raleigh writing says, yeah, I know. It's all in Mitt Romney's sofa cushions. Well, you know, Ron, it kind of is. It's certainly in the sofa cushions of the predator class. That is hard to escape. Marty, Ron was referring to the merger between Duke Energy and Progress Energy, which spells disaster for a lot of people. Then again, a lot of us don't have a choice on who our power company is in the first place. Most of us get a Hobson's choice. No horse at all, or the horse by the door. That's the way it is here with Appalachian Power. Just is. A lot of interesting stories in the stack this evening. Talking about the working class, and Ron mentioned age discrimination? Now, don't get me wrong. I'm not offering this story because there's anything particularly noteworthy about it. It's just a car wreck story. But it's one of those little journalism moments where I wind up going, I bet there's more story here than most people realize. Of course, we will probably not hear any more of it. It's just another car wreck story. The dateline is from a little town called Summersville, West Virginia, just a matter of about 20 minutes from here. It is one of the world's most notorious speed traps. There's always somebody pulled over on the side of the road getting a ticket. They quite frequently have a Canadian license plate. Shaking down Canadians is the pastime of the local Summersville Police Department. No, but the dateline is Summersville, West Virginia, and it simply reads in the Charleston Gazette, a Nicholas County woman was killed Sunday after a tractor-trailer rear-ended the car she was riding in near Mount Nebo, police said. It was along U.S. Route 19, which is the four-lane highway that runs through Summersville. It was the details that caught my eye. The tractor-trailer rear-ended a pickup truck. The 78-year-old woman who was killed was a passenger in that pickup truck. Sad. Even a full one-ton pickup truck does not win in an altercation, especially from the rear, with a semi-tractor trailer. The story is silent on whether the tractor trailer was perhaps a coal hauler or whether it was just some truck, some semi. Yeah, John, Dr. John said, I know where this is going. Coal truck? Don't know. Don't know, John. Ain't in the report. And you know, John and I had an interesting conversation about local journalism on the program last night, and this is one of those moments where you'd like to have them. That whole who, what, when, where, why, how, and how much thing. What kind of semi-tractor trailer? I mean, was it a car hauler? That'd have a lot of extra inertial force. Was it loaded with coal? Was it hauling ass along and empty? Was it a timber truck? We got a lot of timbering goes on around here. Those things are terrifying. No, that information is not conveyed, but this information is. And it's why I bring it to you on the heels of Ron's note from Raleigh. The driver, one Foster March of Glenville, rear-ended a 2007 Chevrolet pickup truck driven by... And there's one thing I left out in reading that to you. Driven by... Age 76. I am no ageist, okay? I'm really not. I would like to perhaps be 76 and doing this show because I love doing this. I have loved it since we began doing it, and I have never ceased to love it. And I think to be doing this at 76 would be, it beats the hell out of gum in your oatmeal. But by the same token, where things like semi-tractor trailers are concerned, why? And so we know it was not somebody driving a Walmart truck because the gentleman, the 76-year-old who plowed into the rear end of the pickup truck, was from Glenville, West Virginia, which is also part of coal country. and not too awfully far from Summersville. Seventy-six years old. Now, is it, does it go without saying? Is it absolutely given? Is it de facto that if you're 76 years old, you ought not be driving a tractor trailer? I will leave that consideration to you. But there is something wrong with a country where a 76-year-old man has to drive a tractor trailer. Isn't there? Well, he was just trying to stay active, Bob. Well, great! Do that! But 76? And you gotta get behind the wheel of a monster truck every day so the lights will stay on? Because you can't make it on Social Security? And you didn't have any kind of a meaningful pension? I don't know. See, Clayton, you get it. Yeah, well, you know, Bob, you can't drive the show up somebody's ass and kill them. True. But is this one of those moments where if we told, George W. Bush about it, he'd say,
I find that uniquely American that a 76-year-old man is still driving a semi-tractor-trailer truck and rear-ending people on four-lane highways. Uniquely American.
The driver of the pickup truck was also transported to the hospital with unknown injuries. No word on whether the decedent was wearing a seatbelt. Not a whole lot of word of any sort of thing in this here newspaper report. This being West Virginia, and this being rank speculation, odds are that that tractor trailer was one of two things. It was either a timber hauler or a coal truck. Long odds against it being a Walmart truck or a Kroger truck or, a truck transporting gasoline for one of the convenience store chains. Significantly better odds that it was either a timber truck or a coal truck. Because, see, here's how the coal truck business works in Appalachia. The coal company, of course, hate actually paying human beings to do work. They hate it from the check-writing standpoint. And they hate it from the liability standpoint, and they hate it from the workers' comp standpoint, and they hate it from the accounting standpoint, from having to withhold things like FICA. So some several years back, they created this dodge whereby instead of hiring somebody to drive truck for the company, they created a small army of so-called, and those of you who follow labor issues will know what a pernicious phrase this is. A small army of so-called independent contractors. Rick Smith, for instance, my colleague who follows me every night on the horn, could tell you a lot about this. Rick was a driver. The coal company actually buys the brand new coal truck. And they say to the driver, here's what we're going to do. We're going to lease you this here truck. And after you've driven for us for X number of years, you're going to own the truck. It'll be all yours. And they pay pennies per the ton of coal hauled. poor worker doesn't get paid by the hour, doesn't even get paid by the mile. He's responsible for his own Social Security withholdings and pays a premium penalty because he is an independent contractor. He has no recourse to workers' compensation if he is injured on the job. And the truck that he gets when he's done hauling is pretty much a rattle trap death rig, worn down to a frazzle. I don't know if that is the case here. I just know that a 76-year-old man was behind the wheel of an immense vehicle when, for reasons passing understanding and certainly not reported in this here report, he lost control of it and rear-ended a man and a woman in a pickup truck, sending the man to the hospital and the woman to her grave. One of the questions that needs to be answered is, did he have to drive that truck? Is this one of those tragedies from the 99%? 76 years old and jamming gears? One more day. One more day. So you can pay the power bill, pay the cable bill, pay the rent, the mortgage, pay for the health insurance. No, he's got Medicare, doesn't he? Again, I don't want this to be perceived as some sort of ageism, but there is something profoundly disturbing in these very few details that we do have. The woman killed was 78 years old. The man who was sent to the hospital was 52. It didn't happen in the dark and still of the night on a rain-slick road. It happened yesterday. At 4 o'clock in the afternoon. And yesterday was a beautiful day. We are told at the end of the story that the investigation continues. And it will. It will continue if by that we mean inquiry will be made as to whether or not there were any improper substances in the bloodstream of the guy who rear-ended the couple. It'll continue. It will likely continue until the end of days for the man who was driving the truck. But the investigation, neither by the author of the story nor by the investigating law enforcement officer, the investigation will not continue as to why 76-year-old men who live in the greatest, richest country in the world are behind the wheel of a machine that is almost always inherently dangerous. Was he running loaded or unloaded? And I don't mean alcohol. I mean what was on the rig. I kind of wish Rick was handy. Rick Smith. I'd like to, because I am not an over-the-road truck driver, I'd like to have Rick's opinion as to whether or not folks need to be driving semis at the age of 76. What becomes of one's reflexes by 76? Did the man have a seizure? We had a story about that just yesterday. Republicans trying to make light and have a yuck, a ha-ha, over a man having a seizure and having three separate accidents, who happened to be the Secretary of Commerce, and trying to allege with no information whatsoever that the man was drunk. There are any number of possible reasons for this wreck. And I don't know if anybody else is like me. I checked the comments section on this story and there's not a peep. But I saw semi-tractor trailer and 76 years old, and a part of me said, stop! What? Is this really the America that we want? Shouldn't, at 76 years old, shouldn't this man have been enjoying a second career or tilling, you know, tilling his garden or having some sort of, has he not? Because odds are, if he's 76 years old, he's probably, given that this is West Virginia, been working since he was 12. Doesn't an enlightened society at some point say, enough, you've earned your rest, go forth and enjoy the grandchildren, travel, see the country, do whatever it was you always dreamed of working when, doing when you were too busy working to do it? Or at least provide that opportunity? He may not have Medicare. He may not have Social Security. He may just have to work until he dies. Or until someone else does. Or did. Like I said, not a big story, not earth-shattering, and certainly just like yesterday's massacre story. Just another day in the greatest, wealthiest nation in the world. Where the butcher's bill is paid by the innocents. And where the funeral directors reap the free market rewards. This from Ron in Raleigh. Hey, Bob, you find me a 76-year-old with no drugs in his system. I work on the shipping end of the distribution chain and occasionally see an elderly, look at who's talking, driver. Most of these guys are just hanging on to get what passes for a pension. Those pensions have been continually pushed further into the future by greedy trucking companies. Yeah. Yeah. Jim noting, based on earlier comments, unparalleled robbery by these bastards, Bob. They really do want it all. A return to wage slavery and feudalism. That's all the working class is good for, isn't it? Working? What do they mean, golden years? Work, damn it! Where else to go? Oh, let's see. Do we save that one for tomorrow? I don't know. I will throw this out there for your consideration. You may recall that Brother Albert called in talking about the furor over the EPA using drones, you know, to make sure that the CAFOs aren't completely poisoning the water supply. And how all the Second Amendment guardians are out there, I'm going to fire at them, I'm going to shoot me down, one of them government drones. You got to lead them real good. Probably take a little more than the 12-gauge. That's what I ordered my Israeli 50 caliber for. Well, if there's ever, if I'm sorry, I'm not trying to be like Groucho Marx and say whatever it is you're for, I'm against it. But this goofy idiot is a pretty good barometer for being able to tell right from wrong. If he's going in one direction and you want to be on the right, moral, decent, upstanding, otherwise integrity side of things, you go the other way. I'm speaking, of course, about Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. I'm rich, I'm socially secure, I'm comfortably well off. Today, in the Senate of the United States, where apparently boredom reigns supreme, Rand Paul, Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, introduced a bill that would prohibit law enforcement agencies from using unmanned aerial vehicles, otherwise known as drones, to conduct surveillance without a warrant. Laudable. Sounds positively laudable, doesn't it? Ought to be an easy call. There's only one problem, and it wasn't brought on by that secret Kenyan Muslim with an anti-colonialist bias and a deep-seated hatred of white people. It goes back to the 1980s, something we students of history like to call the Rehnquist Court. Maybe even the Burger Court, I don't know. You might recall that Chief Justice Rehnquist, who was on the Burger Court too, you might recall that Chief Justice Rehnquist was whacked out of his mind on heavy-duty, mind-altering substances for virtually the entire second half of his Supreme Court career. Wasted! You know, real Spicoli kind of. Dude, hear that? That's my brain. I'm on the Supreme Court of the United States, and I'm toasty. Way back in the 1980s, the Supreme Court of the United States ruled that the Fourth Amendment does not categorically prohibit warrantless aerial surveillance. It doesn't. And, don't anybody tell Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, this or anything, because we wouldn't want actual brains to get in his way. But if the court has already made a ruling that something's not unconstitutional, then his little federal statute's not going to have much impact. The Preserving Freedom from Unwarranted Surveillance Act of 2012 has been introduced, requires the government to obtain a warrant before using drones to conduct surveillance. However, the government would not be required under the bill to obtain a warrant if they wanted to fly it over the borders and stare at Mexicans. You know, they ain't got none of them rights what Jesus done give us. Who does this protect? Well, the laws relating, for instance, to the poisoning of a public water supply by a giant industrial CAFO, those are criminal laws. Guess who gets protected? Yeah, it's not Cletus out there with his shooting gun growing on a patch of Aqua Buddha blue. No. It's people like Monsanto. It's people like ConAgra, Archer Daniels Midland, great big giant cow-killing, pig-killing, and chicken-killing enterprises. They're the ones that get protected by this. Just saying. I don't want, this is, these are the words given by Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, to CNN. I don't want drones roaming across, crisscrossing our cities and our country, snooping on Americans. And that's the surveillance state that I'm very concerned about. And that's what our bill would stop. Coincidentally, he also introduced legislation that would utterly repeal the Patriot Act. No, he didn't. Are you kidding? No. Patriot Act's just fine. Fine as frog hair. These right-wingers never do anything that there isn't some sort of a benefit to the 1%. Remember, it was Senator Rand Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist, who said that he didn't think anybody'd be missing any hilltops in eastern Kentucky and Appalachia. So what if we blow a few of them up? And when the Upper Big Branch disaster took place, he said that, you know, people dying in gassy pits is just part of business. And the free market would regulate itself. So, there you have it. Oh, like I said, there is no small amount of stuff to go into this evening. I guess we'll just say that that's Moran Tuesday stuff for Ron Paul, libertarian ophthalmologist. Oh, a little update while it's on my mind. I told you that I would be talking about the AIC Act every night for the foreseeable future, and I intend to be good to my word on this. We, as I noted, hope to see the bill introduced long about next week. And I got a project for you. Well, some of you. Do any of you live in New Jersey in either the districts of Representative Rush Holt or Representative Frank Pallone? They are both awesome members of the House of Representatives. And they need your phone call. They need to hear from people who live in their district telling them not to sit around, not to wait on the order of their going, but to go at once and sign on as original co-sponsors of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. We need that. Would it happen that you live in, say, Massachusetts? If you do, we've got a job for you too. Because we need Representative Ed Markey to sign on. We'd like that a lot. So if it just so happens that you live in Representative Ed Markey's district, he needs a call from you. For those of you who might be in the jurisdiction of Frank Pallone, I have a phone number for you. Shucks, even if you're not, call him anyway. Be very, very nice, because he's been a real hero on mountaintop removal. And we need him to get on this bill, too. Representative Pallone can be reached at area code 202-225-4671. Area code 202-225-4671. 4671. Representative Pallone needs to hear from you. He needs to become an original co-sponsor. Of the Appalachian Community Health Emergency Act. Betsy, then by all means, have your brother get in touch with his representative. He's in New Jersey, Texas Betsy's brother. Texas Betsy's brother is New Jersey, Texas Betsy's brother. She asks, is it two for Tuesday on the morning front? You know what? It may be. It may be. Because there is stuff we missed last night, or didn't have time for last night. Not the least of which is, well, this one. First thing I thought when I saw this headline, sorry, that's a nasty little chuckle. First thing I thought when I saw this headline was, not if it was Steve Jobs, they wouldn't. Not if it was Dick Cheney, they wouldn't. Story comes out of California. It's the story of a woman there by the name of Toni Trujillo. She's 40 years old. Back in 2010, she went to California to look for specialized treatment of a kidney disorder that she has, that she developed when she was very young, causes inflammation of the kidneys, and she underwent her first kidney transplant in 1991. She needs a new one. Perfectly decent human being. She's been on dialysis since 2007, waiting for another kidney transplant. And now she's going to do some more waiting. Apparently, if one is on the transplant list, one is prone to being tested for a variety of substances. In this case, Ms. Trujillo tested positive for the use in California, legally, of cannabis. She was using cannabis not because she's some sort of... She didn't go to California for the marijuana. She went to California for the medical treatment. But while in California, she did have a consultation with an independent physician, you know, an MD, who said, well, you can take the drugs or you can smoke the dope. Well, he didn't say exactly that. He said... Medical marijuana might meet a lot of the same needs that prescription drugs do at the present time for you. So she began availing herself of medical marijuana. I learned something fascinating in this story that many medical marijuana providers in California actually have independent labs test their product to make sure that it doesn't have nasty shit on it or mold or fungi or anything. Mushroom walks into a bar. Bartender says, we don't serve your type in here. The mushroom says, why not? I'm a fun guy. No, ostensibly the reason for Ms. Trujillo being removed from the transplant list was because the kidney transplant patients have a real problem with a genus of common molds called Aspergillum. No, I'm sorry, Aspergillus. Latin. Second declension. Nominative. Singular. One person did die back in 1988 from inhaling marijuana smoke that had been, that had Aspergillus on it. Aspergillus is a real problem for transplant patients, but here's the thing. Aspergillus is in virtually every breath you take. it's not just on cannabis. So, here we go for poor Ms. Trujillo. Ms. Trujillo has to, she's going to a support group. They've made her admit that she has a problem, and that her life is out of control, and she's in a little 12-step program to get her away from the medical marijuana, and she's routinely and repeatedly drug tested, and if she can stay clean for 6 months, they'll put her back on the transplant list at the bottom. All the while making sure that even though she's sick, she feels extra bad about herself for being the filthy little addict that she is. Because everybody knows that cannabis is addictive. She has to go to counseling every week. And work her way through the 12 steps. Along with the random drug test to see if she's a good enough, clean enough person to be allowed to remain alive. But here, one more joker in the deck. She doesn't know if her 6 months are running or not. In the story published at Raw Story, she said, "I've been trying to call them to find out when that 6 months started, but I haven't been able to get a straight answer. They're supposed to be talking about my case this week, so hopefully I'll find out more." So she doesn't even know she's back on the list. She doesn't even know when the 6 months runs. All she knows is that she's sick and she needs a kidney. Meanwhile, some advocates are saying that there's politics in this. Lawmakers in Washington State, Raw Story reports, have listed chronic kidney failure as a medical condition for which marijuana may be recommended due to the nausea caused by dialysis treatments. But the use of cannabis, even in a medical circumstance, is in California frequently listed as substance abuse. Substance abuse. When all in the world you're trying to do is be able to keep your dinner down and fall asleep at night. Oh yeah, I got a feeling it's going to be a busy evening. Because that is just the tip of the iceberg. There's plenty more where that came from. But for right now, we will, if my computer will only cooperate, we will take a little break and come back with your calls. You are listening to America's listener-supported liberal voice. This is The Horn, headonradionetwork.com, available on a wide variety of listening internet platforms, including Stitcher Radio, Tuner Internet Radio, TuneIn Radio, iTunes Radio, HeadOnRadioNetwork.com itself, and WhiteRoseSociety.org. All kinds of different ways of going about getting the horn. And you are most assuredly invited to join in the conversation. The phone number, of course, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, head on your nickel, 304-658-3333. And email comes into Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, at gmail.com. And we have the addition now of Skype. If you want to call, but you'd rather use that and you've got a decent little microphone, it's better that you not yell at your computer. The audio can be dodgy. But you can Skype into the program. The handle you look for on Skype is Bob Kincaid, B-O-B-K-I-N-C-A-I-D, Horn, H-O-R-N, Bob Kincaid Horn. Very few excuses are left for not becoming part of the program. Coming up, the Green News Report from Brad Friedman and Desi Doyen. I hope you'll join in. I'm Bob. Good call, Sandra.
To the largest wildfire in state history, now burning in New Mexico. In Colorado, one resident is now confirmed dead from the out-of-control Hyde Park wildfire that broke out over the weekend 40 miles west of Fort Collins, Colorado. It's now over 41,000 acres and 0% contained. A record warm winter and spring means the forests are tinder dry, according to fire management officials.
So even though that fuel looks green, normally wouldn't burn this time of year, is burning very well, and that's why we're getting this aggressive and active fire behavior that we are.
State officials across the West are calling for more federal support in fighting these raging wildfires, even as congressional Republicans are proposing cuts to the Forest Service's firefighting budget. While GOP presidential candidate Mitt Romney campaigned last week against hiring firefighters.
He wants to hire more government workers. He says we need more firemen, more policemen, more teachers. Did he not get the message of Wisconsin? The American people did. It's time for us to cut back on government and help the American people.
So state officials in Colorado are begging for more federal firefighters going on here, and Mitt Romney is out on the trail saying, we need fewer firefighters.
Yes, that's exactly what he said.
That is exactly. It's amazing.
That is today's Republican Party. They do seem to be hell-bent on cutting as much government as possible, no matter who it hurts.
You know, we have been doing this Green News Report now for some 3 years. It gets worse and worse each and every year. We see these fire seasons like this, and now you've got Republicans actually calling for cuts to the one thing that can combat the problem that they are unwilling to do anything about. This is just, it's amazing, Des.
And the long-term projections for wildfires are not encouraging. Two new studies out this week indicate that, first, rising temperatures and shifting precipitation patterns will likely cause a marked increase in the frequency of wildfires in the U.S. and Europe over the next 30 years. And the second study of regional temperature trends in the U.S. shows that the already dry and hot Southwest is the fastest warming region in the U.S., warming faster than the rest of the country. The record warm winter and spring this year means that NOAA, the National Oceanic and Atmospheric Administration, announced this week it was indeed the warmest spring in U.S. history. And the last 12 months have been the hottest 12-month stretch on record in the U.S. And 2012 is already shaping up to be the warmest year on record for the entire planet.
We're number one.
In an interview with the Weather Channel, climate scientist Michael Mann, author of the famous hockey stick temperature graph, says that without action to reduce greenhouse gas emissions, this trend shows no sign of stopping.
Hey, wasn't Michael Mann the scientist who was caught in the ClimateGate scandal faking climate data?
He was caught up. that ClimateGate scandal, but he faked nothing, so says five independent science panels.
Well, independent is just another word for left-wing, at least if you're in Virginia.
Yes. So apparently, Virginia Republicans are going to rewrite the words of science, following on the heels of North Carolina's Republican state legislature last week attempting to ban the use of science in predicting sea level rise. Virginia's state Republicans are going a step further, deleting the very words sea level rise from planning documents for future coastal development. They call them liberal code words. Sea levels are currently predicted to rise 3 feet by the end of this century, but in Virginia, that will be called recurrent flooding.
So you have a right-wing legislator actually on record saying that sea level rise is a left-wing code word?
A liberal code word.
A liberal code word. Here's another liberal code word. Dude, you're crazy. For more on the crazy that we covered today and all the crazy we couldn't get to, please check out our website at greennews.bradblog.com. You can download our reports anytime via iTunes. You can listen to us on your mobile device via Stitcher Radio. And you can follow us 24/7 on the Twitters at Green News Report. From bradblog.com, I'm Brad Friedman.
And I'm Desi Doyen.
And this has been your liberally covered Green News Report. I'm going.
It's your second hour in the liberal sandbox, and you're head on with Bob Kincaid.
Seven past the hour as we begin hour number two of this Tuesday night, the 12th of June program. Two for Tuesday, two more ends for the price, 2 days of more ends for the price of one, whatever. A reminder, sadly, fundraising never ends here at the Horn. We try to raise about $100 a night, and that's just to hold even. We spent the first week of June catching up with May. Now we're trying to catch up with June. The PayPal button is at headonradionetwork.com. I'm Bob Kincaid. Sorry about the problem some of you are having getting the program. I trust it's back by now. Some of you are telling me it is. We never even buffered up here, so it may have been a problem with whatever platform you were listening on. Email rolling in from Andy in California under the subject line, Ms. Trujillo and the kidney transplant. Just heartbreaking, the Trujillo marijuana saga. Another reason to love and show great deference for the top 1%. Steve Jobs and Dick Cheney. The John Edwards two-tier society once again playing itself out in real time. One set of rules for the 1%, another for the 99%. Oh, if you have the cash or the power, you go to the head of the line. Again, it boggles the mind. Marijuana is proven to relieve pain, anguish, and inflammation for many suffering citizens. Peer-reviewed studies without the harmful side effects brought to you by the boys and girls at Big Pharma. Not to mention it's actually deemed legal for medical purposes in California. The states' rights issue that Mr. Obama can't get himself to recognize. It's election season, you know, says Andy. Thank you, Andy. And he reminds me of something. As I was standing waiting to go through security in the Frankfurt Airport on the way home a couple of weeks ago. Wow, wasn't even a couple of weeks ago. Amazing. I saw the International Herald Trib on a newsstand there in the front of the airport. And the headline of that paper, and I stood there and read it because I had been illiterate for over a week, you know, not being able to read German. And this was in English, and I was happy to be reading. I am a reader, you know. But the above-the-fold headline story was about organ sales creeping into Europe. The International Herald Trib reporting that what had been previously thought to be a province, in more ways than one, of India and Asia, i.e. the sale of kidneys, had found its way to Europe, and in particular, the more suffering quadrants of Europe, Greece, Spain, Eastern Europe, Latvia, Estonia, Lithuania. I can't recall the Eastern European origin of the particular fellow who was cited, but he'd lost his job some many months back. There were no benefits, no social safety net. They're still, they were, I guess, enjoying the right wing economic miracle in that particular Eastern European country, Ukraine maybe, I don't know. And down to eating only a scarce amount of food every day for he and his for him and his family. The head of the household, the man, had recently reached out to some shady characters to put a kidney up for sale. I know it gets tiresome, but I kind of got to point it out again. They want it all. They want it all. And they're not even paying top dollar for kidneys. No. You would think it would be a seller's market, but no. Selling one kidney, it turns out, wouldn't even keep this man's family alive for a year. It would cripple him for trying to find any work, if any work was there to be had. But yeah, it's made its way to Europe. It's made its way to Europe because austerity has made its way to Europe. Austerity made its way to Europe because the 1% wanted austerity in Europe. I was because they are a funder of mountaintop removal, I was reading about the annual general meeting of the Royal Bank of Scotland last night. Lo and behold, apparently, at the meeting of the annual general meeting of the Royal Bank of Scotland on May the 30th of this year, Sir Upper Class Twit of the Year, whatever, that runs that scheme, told shareholders, he said, "I do not expect to see share value returned within my lifetime or many of yours." And again, just like that median household income, where'd all them share values go? People like Andy are certainly sharp on, and Sandra are sharp on issues related to finance and the economy. Where'd that share value go? Because the law of conservation of mass and energy says that matter is neither created nor destroyed, nor is energy. That means when somebody lost, somebody won. There's a lot richer people out there as a result of this plundering. A lot of them. More than we probably acknowledge exist. Right? Not in our lifetimes. That was the phrase. Hey, welcome to the program. Or not. Hey, welcome to the program. Oh, this does get frustrating. I need a producer. Welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello.
Hi, yeah. I live in Rush Holt District. I'm going to call him tomorrow. But if you could put together a little thing, I'll send you an email. My name's Joe. About mountaintop removal's effect on children, because I'm getting Chris Smith as my congressman, because it redistricted us.
Oh, okay. Okay.
And he seems like a decent guy, but he's just wrong. And he's very, you know, very Catholic. So if you can give him stuff that convinces him that, about the unborn, it might sway him, but I doubt it.
Well, the easiest thing to do, Joe, is to go to crmw.net.
Crmw.net?
Yeah, that's Cold River Mountain Watch's website.
Okay.
And having once gone there, what you'll see, I'll walk through this real quick, crmw.net.
Mm-hmm.
And it's rather prominently displayed on the main page.
Testimony on health impacts of mountaintop removal?
No. Oh, dadgummit. I guess we must be in the middle of a redo here. Well, resources. No. Oh, health. Okay. So there's a drop down tab at the top. Okay.
Right.
There's one that says resources.
Okay.
At the bottom of that list is something that says health impacts.
Uh huh.
And what you'll find there is a list of every one of the studies, complete with a synopsis. And the very first one is about mountaintop removal and birth defects. And if you'll just send that link to the congressperson in question, they will have all of the data right in front of them.
Yeah, I'll take a look at it. I'll see if maybe I'll print it out and stop by his office.
Oh, that'd be great.
Yeah, you know, hand him, because I think his office is in the town I live in. You know, they have their districts in the state go all over the place.
Excellent, excellent. And, you know, Rush Holt is your congressman right now?
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a great one.
Yeah, I was surprised when you said that he wasn't...
Well, I mean, he's aware of it, and I think he approves of it, but we need him to be an original co-sponsor of it.
It just surprised me, because I figured he would be involved in that.
Yeah, and what's really important is that his constituents tell him that he need to be...
Yeah,
because, you know, we hillbillies can beat on the door all we want to, but we can't vote for him. It's the voters. That's what matters.
Yes, okay. All right, so I'll let you talk to people who have actual entertaining things to say.
No, it's not. This is no less entertaining than anything else. This is citizen activism, and it serves as an inspiration to a lot of other people, Joe. So don't sell yourself short, brother.
Yeah. Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Uh huh. Take care.
Bye.
Bye now. Joe calling from New Jersey. And that's for anybody. Coal River Mountain Watch. There's also a link there to stoptheache.org. And at Stop the Ache, you can find the bill. You can find all manner of the studies. You can find the summaries. Either way, it's all easy. And like I noted before, this is a great way to be politically active and know that you are making a real difference in someone's life. So I had a phone full of blinking lights. They are now all gone. If you want to get involved with the program, this would be a good time to do it early in the program, 18 minutes past the hour, the second hour of the program, here this evening. Otherwise, there are, two stories. And yes, this is, there's a couple here. First off, let us go to Representative, because I think there's some value in seeing just exactly how sleazy these people are, how soulless, how utterly absent of morality, of ethics, of resembling common human decency. I think there's value in this. Now, on the other hand, I had an email from our buddy Reverbo the other day. You know, he's down behind the possum line, behind the cornbread curtain, doing deep cover work. And he sent me a posting from, I believe, the New York Times. Yeah. And it's from the New York Times Magazine. The title, and I understand why it's titled the way it is, but it's still troubling. It is by Steve Almond, and the title of the piece is "Liberals Are Ruining America. I Know Because I Am One." And he makes some trenchant points about the fact that we do ourselves no favors, for instance, when progressives and liberals go on Radio Rwanda. But then he goes on and says, this is the tragic flaw of the modern liberal. We choose to see ourselves as innocent victims of an escalating right-wing fanaticism, but too often we serve as willing accomplices to this escalation and to the resulting degradation of our civic discourse. We do this without even meaning to, by consuming conservative folly as mass entertainment. Now, I've said it before, and I will say it again. I'm not trying to be entertaining here. If it's interesting, good. Because we have to have our interest held. But this program is not a substitution for a juggler. Or a sword swallower. Or a lion tamer. Or a dancing contest. Or a basketball game. More on that later. This is, I hope, an examination of the facts and of reality. In pointing out this story to me, Reverbo said under the subject line, "Well put, but how to do it?" Good writer and well said, but where's our outlet? The internet? Mainstream media ignores us, and also, where exactly are the reasonable voices on the other side with whom to redirect the country toward a fair and responsible future? The right claims there are tons of reasonable Republicans out there. I don't see or hear them. For that matter, a good third of our side are lost to the money. Our side. Seems like the first thing to do is take over our own party. Hear, hear. Reverbo continues, "I agree the progressive reasonable voices have been for the most part reactive, but I'm not sure we can win this war by just ignoring the enemy. It sounds good, but we've lost the mics, the cameras, and the stage. The president is the only one who still has any of those." My response to Reverbo was, yeah, he does have that, and he uses it so seldom it has dust on it, or they have dust on them. Steve Allman says, that we are somehow the problem because we take note of the worst of the worst. He says, not all right-wing pundits spew hate, but the ones who do are the ones we liberals dependably aggrandize. Well, tell me the right-wing pundits who don't spew hate. Pat Buchanan? George Will? You know, just because George Will mumbles in a sort of teeth-clenching way and wears bow ties and talks about baseball a lot, doesn't mean that he's not full of hate. The right-wing agenda itself is toxic with hate. Even if you weren't a hate-filled right-winger, the minute you start talking about the agenda, you're talking about hate. Because that is what it consists of. So I fear that Mr. Allman's analysis is somewhat suspect. Because when somebody does something as sleazy as, say, a Louis Gohmert in the clip you are about to hear, well, it don't get no more Republican than Louis Gohmert. Of Texas, of course. I told you yesterday about the fact that Karl Rove's little organization had a real ha-ha fest over alleging that Commerce Secretary Bryson was drunk when he had his car wrecked. And they apologized. Well, there will be no apology coming from Louis Gohmert. And, of course, where the sleazy stuff is put out for public consumption is always a subject of discussion as well. Where did Louis Gohmert go to spread this latest little patina of filth? Innuendo? Why, naturally, he went to a network run by the followers of the religion of peace and love. He went on the program hosted by, yeah, you guessed it, a moron from yesterday, Tony Norman Perkins.
Yes, Mother Bates.
Because when you want to spew hate, where you go is the American religion industry Christian right.
As the official documents say, witnesseth.
Now, these are not the kind of people that you want heading up the country. They're not honorable, honest people. And so this hearing we had last week really kind of accentuated that. You got Bryson out in California. It's really unusual to have a seizure cause you to have one wreck and then cause you to put your car in gear and keep going until you have another wreck. That kind of seizure is really unusual, you know.
He's the secretary. What's his role?
Commerce.
Secretary of Commerce.
You're talking about our commerce. That's who's in charge of keeping businesses going. A guy that crashes his car from car to car. And then, of course, you know, you remember the appointments to, speaking of cars.
Did you hear that? Did you hear the laughter? They cause you to car crash from car to car. Is that one of those reasonable right-wingers? Yeah, I didn't think so either. That kind of seizure's really unusual, you know? You know, where you have a seizure cause you to have one wreck and then cause you to put your car in gear and keep going till you have another wreck. That kind of seizure's really unusual. I don't know. I guess maybe Representative Gohmert is so far up the 1% food chain that perhaps he has a driver drive him places. But it's not unusual at all. It's not like the Commerce Secretary was driving one of those cars that you got to get out and turn the crank there under the radiator to get it going again. As the folks at Think Progress point out, most cars now have automatic transmissions. If you're having a seizure, you're not necessarily in control of your foot on the brake now, are you? Foot off brake, car go. Yeah, let's hear that again.
From his car, from car to car. And then, of course, you know, you remember the appointments to, speaking of cars.
You heard the laughter. There's two hosts there. There's the one goober in the white shirt, and then there's Tony Perkins remotely. They both chuckle. You know, Tony Perkins, who wants America to have family values. Right? As Texas Betsy points out, those are complex seizures as opposed to simple seizures. And it could still be multiple seizures at once and not one long seizure. Betsy pointing out, my seizures come in bunches. Cowgirl in the chat room pointing out, we ignore the right wing at our own loss. And I agree. Steve Almond writes, The real problem isn't Limbaugh. He's just a businessman who's paid to reduce complex cultural issues to ad hominem assaults. The real problem is that liberal... Pay attention. We're about to find out what our real problem is. This is one of those moments where I miss Joe Bagent. The real problem is that liberals, both on an institutional and a personal level, have chosen to treat for-profit propaganda as news. No, damn it, we don't treat it that way. The for-profit propaganda networks do. I'm proud to say that I think I originated the phrase that Fox News is not a product name, it is a slogan. Like Lucky Charms isn't lucky. It's just a cereal. In so doing, says Mr. Almond, we have helped redefine liberalism as an essentially reactionary movement. Rather than initiating discussion or advocating for more humane policy, we react to the most vile and nihilistic voices on the right. I tend to think that we can walk and chew gum at the same time. We actually do both. I would not be sitting here telling you about the AIC Act if all in the world I wanted to do was sit and gripe. He continues, media outlets like MSNBC and the Huffington Post often justify their coverage of these voices, yet because MSNBC and the Huffington Post, they define liberalism for me. I don't know about you, but they do for me. By claiming to serve as watchdogs. It would be more accurate to think of them as de facto loudspeakers for conservative agitprop. The demagogues of the world, after all, derive power solely from their ability to provoke reaction. Those liberals like me who take the bait are to blame for their allies' influence. No, you're not, Steve! Stop hating, buddy! Stop hating yourself! Stop loathing yourself! If we as liberals have a problem, some of it comes in the self-loathing department. We really do. We get all fuzzy and Anne Frankie and we want to think that right-wingers are at the end of the day that right-wingers are still basically good. Steve, they're not. They are not. And what you see as evidence of merely the loudest and most obnoxious of them is actually a fair representative sampling of the thinking of the bunch of them. Precisely because they are a bunch. They group think. They Borg think. Limbaugh is not as rich as he is because there's a bunch of liberals who, as Steve Almond described himself, sit around taking quiet glee in listening to Limbaugh and then return the car's radio to NPR when they park it? There are not 3 million of them in America who do that. I wonder if Steve Almond knows that there are, for instance, 1,000 hours of Limbaugh and Hannity and Savage and on and on and on for every hour of anything resembling progressive broadcasting. Does he know that? And there aren't enough of us to be listening to all of that and catapulting the propaganda. There just aren't. He continues, this slavish coverage of conservative scoundrels does nothing to illuminate policy or challenge our assumptions. On the contrary, its central goal mirrors that of the pundits it reviles, to boost ratings by reinforcing easy prejudices. These are not easy prejudices. As liberals and progressives, we don't walk around looking for people to be easily prejudiced against. But goddamn, do we just go whistling past the graveyard every time Rush Limbaugh assaults an innocent young woman? Do we just pretend nothing is happening? Every time a Willard Romney says that America is overtaught, has too much knowledge, knows too much, has too much edumacation, and we don't need no new teachers? Yeah, he finally started backing away today, Willard did. Of course I want more teachers, he said. And that's well and good, and I guess the memory hole has already swallowed up the reality of it, but he really, really, really did say he didn't want them. We covered it the other day. It was Friday. Allman said these ratings come courtesy of dolts like me, liberals who choose every day to click on their links and to watch their shows. He starts to draw parallels between a liberal and the most extreme elements of the right wing. You know, the idiots that show up with semi-automatic firearms and tri-cornered hats and Gadsden flags. They're just like you. Except for when they're not, which is all the time. He says, I secretly feel the same helplessness and rage that animates the extreme right wing of this country. I see a world dangerously out of balance, morally, economically, ecologically, and my natural impulse is to blame those figures who, in my view, embody the decadent ignorance of the age. They become convenient scapegoats. No! No, dadgummit, no! Shall we look up the meaning of the word scapegoat? What is the origin of the word scapegoat? Where does it come from? Well, the online dictionary says that it's a person or a group made to bear the blame for others or to suffer in their place. The origin comes from somewhere around Leviticus 16:8, according to this dictionary definition. A goat let loose in the wilderness on Yom Kippur after the high priest symbolically laid the sins of the people on its head. Well, these vile right-wingers are not that. They are not that at all. They do not embody the decadent ignorance of the age and become convenient scapegoats. Scapegoats are, to a degree or another, innocent. What they are is what they are. A right-wing legislator who promotes legislation that forbids the usage of science in calculating future sea level rise, a right-wing legislator who moves to strike the word sea level rise as being liberal code from the language, is not innocent. Not by any stretch of the imagination. Some of this is confessional, I realize. Allman says, I've come to rely on private moments of indignation for moral vindication. I fume at the inequity of pundit A and laugh at the hypocrisy of candidate B and feel absolved without ever having left my couch. It's a closed system of scorn and self-congratulation. If that's how it works, it ain't right. The only purpose to learning just how evil, just how pernicious, just how powerful these monsters are is not to keep you from getting up and going out and doing something, but trying to convince you to get off your ass and get your feet on the street. He says, I feel overrun by moral uncertainty, bewildered by the complexity of our planetary crises. Wouldn't it be nice, I ask myself, to feel entirely sure of my beliefs? Well, Mr. Almond, I would suggest that the problem is not... Well, the problem's with you, buddy. Because it is possible to feel certain in your beliefs. It is possible to know that continuing, for instance, to poison the planet by burning coal is a surefire way to grim and dusty death. I don't believe that. I rely on scientists who have put forward peer-reviewed data who know it to be so. Not scientists who are in the pay of the Petroleum Institute of America or PISAND or whatever the acronym is. EPA Administrator Lisa Jackson gave an interview to Grist and I believe The Guardian not too long back. Ken Ward wrote about it to a certain extent over at his Coal Tattoo blog. And she said that one of the fundamental problems the EPA faces, and I want to get this right, so let me go over there. She says that one of the fundamental problems that the EPA faces is precisely what I just described. That everything they do has to be met or followed by rigorous scientific review and testing. And in point of fact, damn, this computer gets frustrating sometimes. Here we go. Well, from the interview with Grist and The Guardian, she says, in regard to coal, and this is pretty tepid stuff, I got to tell you. She says, where coal's concerned, I always tell people it's not about coal, it's about the pollution. Okay. But she says, inside the Washington Beltway, I'm not sure whether facts always matter, and that's a sad thing for our country. Oftentimes, EPA's work is peer-reviewed and then peer-reviewed again, and yet it will be challenged by some report that hasn't been peer-reviewed at all. There needs to be equivalence here. Needs to be. Should be. And you know what? For Mr. Steve Almond, I'll note that that is not some self-loathing liberal's fault that there isn't. And apparently Lisa Jackson knows that. She said, so whether it's climate change and the myriad reports about that, whether it's people in rural America who've been told all manner of untruths about the work we're doing, what she's talking about is Appalachia and the Obama EPA administration war on coal are trying to destroy us over here. Yeah, there's billboards. There's billboards. I could drive you and show you one. The Obama EPA no job zone, even though coal employment rose. It's one of the few places that employment did rise during the Obama administration, the coal sector. Now, she says, so whether it's climate change and the myriad reports about that, whether it's people in rural America who've been told all manner of untruths about the work we're doing, whether it's that we're going to regulate farm dust further, or that we're going to regulate spilled milk, those are a couple of classic lies the right wing have told. Probably a part of that there Agenda 21 of the United Nations One World Government. The next thing you know, we'll all be earning our paychecks in euros. She says, no matter how many times we say it, whether it's climate change and the myriad reports about that, whether she doesn't use that myriad word and done lost about 99% of the American right wing. Myriad. Wasn't that one of them mermaid names? Ariel and Myriad and Muriel and... Right. Whether it's climate change and the myriad reports about that, whether it's people in rural America who've been told all manner of untruths about the work we're doing, whether it's that we're going to regulate farm dust further or that we're going to regulate spilled milk, no matter how many times we say it, and I mean that we could just put this up on a billboard somewhere, billboard, TV ad, no matter how many times we say it, because their main sources of information are not really being truthful in how they're giving them information, we spend an awful lot of time trying to explain to people what we're really doing. And it's not just on the environmental front, but that's emblematic of how folks have learned to use this new media world. True, true, true. But no, Mr. Almond, I think he recognizes his own flaw. He says, I'm not trying to soft pedal the very real pathologies of the modern conservative movement, even though that's what he just did. The rich and powerful have clearly found in the Republican Party a willing collaborator. They've spent billions peddling Americans a failed theology of deregulation and lower taxes that's designed to foster and protect obscene wealth, not to serve the vast majority of our citizens. Thanks to the Supreme Court, the coming election will mark an unprecedented infusion of corporate propaganda into the political bloodstream. No, that's corporate money, Steve. But he comes to an odd conclusion. He said it's for this exact reason that the left, what left, can no longer afford to squander time and energy engaging the childish arguments of paid provocateurs. We have to seek out those on the right willing to engage in genuine dialogue and ignore the rest. Well, like Reverbo asked, where are they? Really, where are they? Because I think Mr. Almond is seeking to have a discussion with a dodo bird, with a passenger pigeon, with a dinosaur, with something that went extinct quite some time ago. Or is this just another way of saying maybe we really ought to be having a conversation with Jebby Bush? Because, you know, Jebby came out the other day and said, well, you know, Ronald Reagan couldn't win the Republican nomination now. He said Republicans are entirely out of their minds where tax policy is concerned. Is that what it is? Because it's kind of disturbing. Is Mr. Almond trying to give cover to those non-weird Republicans, wherever they may be? Because the funny thing about those non-weird Republicans is if you sit down and talk to them about the things that matter to us, you're going to find that they're not much interested in compromise, and you're going to find that everything the weirdos believe in, they still believe in too. Mitch Daniels of Indiana was said to be a moderate, was said to be somebody that the Republicans could really challenge Barack Obama with. Tim Pawlenty was said to be the same guy. You saw how long Tim Pawlenty lasted. Mitch Daniels wouldn't even run. And lo and behold, we find out in the last couple of days that Mitch Daniels doesn't even know how bad off working people are in the state of Indianistan. Steve Almond wants to have conversations with people who don't exist. He says, in this world, it would be much harder to mislead people being a world where we have conversations with those good faith right-wingers. In this world, it would be much harder to mislead people because media outlets would shift their resources to covering the content of proposed legislation, the exploding role of corporate influence in our affairs of state, and the scientifically confirmed predicaments we face as a species. Bull! The for-profit media machine is owned by about six mega corporations. And there is a lot more money to be had in promoting the so-called controversy than there is in dealing with actual facts, because facts are boring. Or, as St. Ronnie of Raygun once famously noted, facts are stupid things. He says, liberals and moderates would no longer be able to mollify themselves by watching John Stewart mock conservative whack jobs. They would be forced to consider their own values and the sort of actions necessary to rectify or reify. Reify? Is that a word? Those values in the world. They might even consider breaching our artificially inflated partisan divide. I guess we're part of, I guess we're, you and me, us, the Horn family, the little old us, we're artificially inflating that partisan divide because we are aware of just how nasty they are. See, Steve Allman don't know nothing about no stump licker bunch. Going to walk up with his little kazoo, playing a chorus, a kumbaya, and get his nose mashed all over his face by a liquored-up right-wing member of the stump licker bunch who's going to say, get up, I want to hit you again. And if you don't get up, I'm going to kick and stomp you. He says this last measure, you know, the one about breaching our artificially inflated partisan divide, this last measure, I realize, hasn't worked for President Obama. But he's up against, he's up against a cohort of politicians underwritten by special interests. We citizens can't use that excuse. We all have the same basic interests. To provide for our families, to worship as we see fit, to pursue happiness. We live in a country of unimaginable abundance. You know, where 76-year-old guys have to drive truck. It shouldn't be so hard to find common ground. You know what? It might not be so hard to find common ground if most of the common ground was not already in the possession of the 1%. I'm as heartbroken as the next liberal at the cynicism of the Republican Party and the inability of Democrats to confront them in blunt moral terms. Steve, quit being heartbroken and maybe get angry. But as Americans, we are endowed with the freedom to vote for the sort of democracy we want. You know, on machines where the intent of the voter is never actually possible to be ascertained. Not just at the ballot booth, but with our attention and energy. The more we devote to amplifying conflict, the less we listen to each other. You know, I mentioned at the beginning of this program that right-wingers are not welcome here. They're no more welcome on this program than Jehovah's Witnesses are at the front door. I'd no more let a right-winger on this program than I would wear a Friends of Coal t-shirt. Because to do so is entirely contrary to my values. I will happily enter into a discussion and a debate if there is some sort of indication that the other side is interested in solving the problem. If it is possible that the other side might admit that they are maybe wrong. Because see, as liberals and progressives, we're real good at admitting we're wrong. When we are. The problem with the right wing is they're no good at admitting they're wrong when they are or aren't. I do agree with his final statement. It is time for all of us, liberal, conservative, and otherwise, well, okay, I agree with part of it. It's time for the liberals to define ourselves as Americans not by who we hate, but by what we can do to strengthen our communities and country. Because, see, he says, it's time for all of us, liberal, conservative, and otherwise, to define ourselves as Americans, not by who we hate, but by what we can do to strengthen our communities and country. The conservatives and the right-wingers are actively trying to define themselves and this country by what of this country they can destroy. We have too many teachers. We have too many firefighters. We have too many policemen. We need to get rid of the Department of Education. We need to get rid of the Department of Energy. We need to get rid of the Department of Agriculture. We need to get rid of. I mean, you do remember the Republican presidential pageants, don't you? They define themselves by what they want to destroy, and that is a creative act of creating the America they dream of or think they do. You do not have, and you never will have, a willing partner going forward in trying to improve this country. If you're working with somebody who's trying to destroy what you're trying to save. You cannot go into an operating room as a surgeon with Jack the Ripper as your scrub nurse. And that's essentially what Steve Almond is suggesting that we do. Scalpel? Rusty knife? Can we use the rusty knife, please? Penicillin. Ebola? Yeah. Hey, welcome to the program.
Oh, what's going on there, Bob?
What do you know, Mr. Spike?
Not much. I haven't been going around the world like you have been of late, but...
Hey, I only went halfway.
A third of the way. It feels like lately every week I've been going to another universe in the part of Pennsylvania I've been in, so...
Yeah, and you don't even have to leave home.
Well, I don't have to leave the boundaries of my state. Although I do for the motel at night, because it's cheaper for a motel a little bit over the border in upstate New York. Because the price of motels in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, the fair market value is through the roof since gas companies are basically... Housing ungodly amounts of gypsies, essentially. These drillers from the southern states, mostly, that are working for them. I'm taking basic training in Mansfield, Pennsylvania, which is in Tioga County. Go to the middle of nowhere and make a right, and you'll end up in Tioga County. Beautiful scenery in Pennsylvania, but it's all going to be lost soon. Cruising around, and it's just nonstop of these water trucks that they use to spray the water in when they frack. That say, you know, clean water only, because they need clean water to pollute our water. And then, you know, all these pickup trucks, all these diesel dually pickup trucks with Texas and Arkansas and Mississippi and Alabama plates. Occasionally we see some northern ones. You might get a Massachusetts or a Wisconsin. I noticed the Wisconsin plates had the engineer's local sticker on it. So these are the guys working the big crane setting these things up. But, you know, Virginia, I don't see too many people from Pennsylvania, I might add. You know, this whole myth here. Our
right,
governor,
but it's
good
gonna...
friend of Jerry Sandusky saying, no, you don't want to tax them.
And then there's the Sandusky trial, which I haven't even gotten to yet.
Yeah, which is local news here, you know. There's national sensational news coverage. But for us, it's a local news story. Even if it wasn't Jerry Sandusky, this would probably still be like a top story here. You know, anytime there's a case of forcible rape on underage children, that kind of should be big news. Obviously,
yeah, and it turns out that higher ups there at Penn State University maintained a secret dossier on Sandusky's alleged activities. And the one that just dropped me like a moose was the phrase that, did you catch this, Spike? That they didn't turn him in because they thought it would be more, everybody sit down, strap in, there will be screaming after I say this. Penn State officials thought it would be more humane to keep Sandusky's raping ways a secret.
And by humane, you know, what they really mean is we won't lose donors. We need those donors real bad right now. And also, I might add, this news also just kind of actually goes to prove that the high-ups knew long before Joe Paterno came along what was going on. I know a lot of people just, especially not understanding how the pecking order of law enforcement in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, just really like to say, well, you know, Paterno just could have went to a higher authority. But... that really isn't possible because there's 1,200 municipal police agencies in Pennsylvania. You have townships, you have boroughs, cities. You also have some high schools have their own, or school districts have their own police department, and you have...
And the university has its own police department.
Yeah.
If it's anything like down here, for instance, the campus cops at West Virginia University and Marshall University.
Yeah.
And I guess every other college are invested with identical powers to those of the West Virginia State Police.
Mm-hmm. That's exactly how it is here. And their boundary is the campus and 100 yards outside of their campus. So actually, two agencies cover the off-campus housing across the street from these campuses, essentially, since the campus police, that's their turf, and whatever municipality agency they might be a border with has coverage there. So in all actuality, the Penn State Police Department, really a bigger culprit in this cover-up than Joe Paterno. I'll say it again. I was never like a Penn State. I own no Penn State merchandise. I have no Penn State stickers or license plate frames on my vehicle. But I really feel that the media, because they just needed a famous name when this was a national story, unnecessarily piled on to Paterno when they were much bigger culprits to talk about. Our governor, again, also one of them, being the former attorney general who seemed to have no ambition to handle this case when it came to him years later, after Penn State was already covering the stuff up. You know, you can find him on the board of trustees of Penn State these days.
Yeah, I don't want to write Joe Paterno a blank check because of the scope of and the monstrosity of the crimes. But by the same token, I did when I saw this clip about it would be more humane to keep it under wraps so he could keep on raping little boys. I did think, in a way, and I do not mean this in any spirit of cruelty or animus. The first thing I thought was, if Joe Paterno had not died of natural causes before this trial, I would not have blamed him for committing suicide during it.
I think in a way this did still kill him because, if none of this was going on, he probably still would be alive fighting cancer right now. You know, when you get a terminal disease, sometimes it's on your will to live, how long you live, and I think just all this going on when he was diagnosed was just kind of like, you know what? You know, why am I going to stick around for now? There's nothing worth living for at this point.
Right. I mean, because there's no getting around the fact that he loved Penn State University.
Yeah, yeah. He got a huge salary, but a lot of that actually went back into the academics. You know, a lot of people do stuff for PR stunts, but he kind of lived a simple life anyways, so he really...
Well, it sure didn't look... I mean, the shots of his house didn't look like any kind of grand mansion in you know, Beaver Falls or whatever, or State College.
Yeah, it was a place that was built a long time ago, early on in his coaching days, and he still had dinner every, Saturday night at the VFW in State College, you know, getting, $6 spaghetti dinner. I mean, in a way, he kind of somewhat lived a more... He probably had more in touch with the average person than a Mitt Romney type, even though he had tons of money, because he wasn't someone who lived a lavish lifestyle.
And so the question, the question becomes, why didn't, I understand your point, Spike, when you say that, there were limitations on what he could do.
Yeah,
but why didn't he do something?
The police couldn't just jump in. Unless the attorney general ordered them to.
I can't help thinking that Joe Paterno probably could have gotten, if he had asked for one, a meeting with the attorney general.
Well, what difference does it make? Our attorney general is Tom Corbett. He's not going to do anything. I know Tom Corbett's M.O. Tom Corbett, you could come in with all the evidence in the world. I mean, that's like going and exposing brutality and scandals to the warden at Shawshank in Shawshank Redemption. I mean, that's the mentality of sociopath that you're dealing with our governor here. If this in any way interferes with something that would advance his causes, I'm not saying he'd have a prison guard shoot someone because he knows who really killed Tim Robbins' wife, but he's not that far from being just that ridiculously self-centered. I think it would have been, even if he went to the Attorney General, Tom Corbett wouldn't have given a rat's ass, because Tom Corbett only cares about Tom Corbett. And it's a very dangerous thing for me to be saying, in considering what my position in the Commonwealth is these days, but our governor is... There was a protest in Jersey Shore today over these people that live in a trailer park.
Riverdale.
So, yes. The most they'll get is $2,500 to move, get up and move. These are either younger poor people or older poor people. Either way, they're poor people. $2,500 not really going to take them too far.
Right.
You know, and by the way, this company could afford to give them $25,000 each to move, but they're not doing that. So, there was a protest today, and don't you know, the Pennsylvania State Police showed up, and the Pennsylvania State Police separated the residents who were in agreement with the protests, and the protesters keeping them off the trailer park property. And they wouldn't say why they were sent there, what, you know, who complained to send them there. The Pennsylvania State Police, people who are paid for by taxpayer dollars, unlike other forms of law enforcement, and, well, don't you know, it would almost seem as if this company, Aqua America, was getting someone to use the Pennsylvania State Police as their personal security agency.
Yeah.
Wonder, you know, considering there was a Supreme Court case that clearly said law enforcement is under the executive branch, couldn't imagine who would have the authority in the executive branch to send the Pennsylvania State Police to help out the fracking industry.
Let's see, that would either be Satan or the governor.
Yeah, I would go with the latter, actually, because
he's real.
He's real. I mean, that's what you're dealing with, our governor. When handicapped people come to protest him, he shuts the elevators down so they can't get upstairs in the Capitol building.
That's kidding.
Yeah, he did that. That was exposed recently. And by the way, our governor gets a free pass because the national media, again, with this whole Sandusky thing, was more focused on the name Paterno than on the governor. And then for that matter, too, we have the other obnoxious fat governor to our east next door getting more of the camera time. So he really gets a, you know, and you have Wisconsin. Corbett has had one of the greatest free passes in the world of news. Even in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania, he's highly ignored. Chris Christie will get more attention for something he says in Pennsylvania media than our own governor. And I'm not talking the Philly media who covers South Jersey, mind you. I'm talking northeastern, central media markets.
Yeah, Harrisburg.
Harrisburg, Scranton, Woodbury. They're not really talking about what the governor's up to. The governor is a rock star with these members of the media.
Why?
Access. And he does whatever he wants. I mean, this guy could probably put Walker to shame and even Christie to shame. And he's even more obnoxious than Chris Christie. He just doesn't sound like a Sopranos character when he does it. You know, there was a time where there were honorable people in the Commonwealth of Pennsylvania and Harrisburg, but not as many these days. Although, then again, this is the state where we had some Republicans who were up to no good. And so what they did is they did a plea bargain where they ratted out a guy who actually was innocent, and he was the one that went and shot himself in front of the media. So that's my state capital for you right there. The Buddy Dwyer case of the 80s. Welcome to Pennsylvania. We've had problems with scandals and corruption, sociopathic behavior in our state capital for so long that we're desensitized to it by the time this guy shows up. I mean, it's not like Tom Ridge was a sweetheart or Ed Rendell, who, while he might have been a Democrat, boy, he was more of a libertarian. He was like Ron Paul's dream come true libertarian. He wanted to sell our turnpikes to a French company at one point. Just the pay-to-play way of things in Pennsylvania is so prevalent that it makes me highly cynical that anything can be positively done at times because I know.
Well, but Spike, you're asking the larger question, not just about Pennsylvania, but about the whole country. And regardless of that that little kumbaya piece played on kazoo by Mr. Allman that I was reading from earlier. I'm convinced, you know, like I said, I don't do this just to throw bombs or whatever they call it. I am convinced all the way down to my toenails, to the very last tip ends of my thinning hair. I am convinced that there is one element of the body politic in this country whose goal is nothing more nor less than burn, baby, burn. And they don't want to do any, and they especially don't want to see anything happen on this president's watch. But if they got complete power, their whole agenda would be to continue to dismantle the government of the people, by the people, and for the people, and see it perish from the earth. It is not what they want. They don't operate this way. They are oligarchs, they are authoritarians, and they want whatever government they have to be as oligarchic and authoritarian as they are. Ideas of democracy and freedom are utterly alien to them unless it is the freedom to watch your house burn down, the freedom to live in penury and poverty, and the freedom to die of some agonizing illness unless you're paying the VIG to the for-profit health insurance industry.
Yeah, well, precisely. And also, I might add, with the whole discussion of reasonable Republicans, I think the bigger key to point out is a lot of the reason Republicans have jumped ship one way or another from the Republican Party, they're either, A, have switched a political affiliation to either independent or Democrat. We have a lot of people in Pennsylvania who actually did switch from Republican to Democrat and have not switched back. Or, B, they're just uninvolved at this point. They've just given up because they feel their party is just too corrupted either by money influence or by craziness, being a little too out of touch, and maybe they don't feel that their personal views still fit in line with even the Democratic Party, so therefore they're just uninvolved, which is really the whole principle of negative politics anyways, is to deter people from voting so that only the most hardcore partisans show up.
And bingo!
When it's a game like that, the right wing wins, because what I've seen is in off-election years, and my township in particular is a great example, the Republicans do quite well when no one shows up. Because they're
Republicans always do well when nobody shows up.
Precisely. You know, Democrats, we need huge draws. I guarantee you, we're going to have a huge draw on our hands in the township this presidential election. Just knowing the demographics of my town, not exactly, this comes off slightly wrong, but it's true. This is not exactly the whitest town in Pennsylvania, especially in the northeastern part of Pennsylvania. So, it's not exactly an area that Mitt Romney is going to be very popular in. The president was wildly popular in my township 4 years ago. I suspect he probably still will do okay. I doubt the Republicans are taking my township for the presidential election. The downside for me is Democrats.
But the presidential election
didn't show up, and Republicans did very well around.
But Pennsylvania, as a swing state, always turns on what seems to be a common analysis. What will Philly and Pittsburgh do? If you get Pittsburgh as a Democrat should, then it turns on Philly.
I don't think Philly has gone Republican, Philly proper for a president in a very long time. Richard Milhouse Nixon may be the last one to have claimed to have won that city. For that matter, I would also just like to point out, which is maybe why the two campaigns are starting to ignore us, George H.W. Bush was the last Republican to win Pennsylvania. We've actually gone every 4 years for presidential election blue for quite some time, which is funny considering how many right-wingers other years, because other years we have less of a turnout, do. But when it's a presidential year, we've actually done quite well for the Democrats away. I mean, Kerry took the state, and Kerry was a terrible candidate. Gore took the state, another really bad candidate, and Bubba took this state. You know, Bubba was the first Democrat to really take over Pennsylvania. President Obama did pretty good here, too. So I think a lot of this, that because those big cities will draw huge crowds and huge crowds of Democrats. It's just unfortunate that there's a lack of loyal ferocity. You know, the left is maybe lazy and complacent sometimes. You know, you win the presidential election, okay, we can take a year off. No, you really can't if you really want to win more. That's the problem.
Right, because Republicans never take a year off.
Right, well, especially these old people. What else do they have to do? A lot of these, like, old Republican voters, they have nothing better to do than come out of it every April or May, depending on when a primary falls, and every November. What else do they have? It's some of them, that's literally all they're living for. Some of these, and even some of the Democrats, these old people that vote loyally, this is all they have to almost look forward to in life at their later years. 2 years ago, there was a guy who, or maybe it was last year, it was last November, he died at a polling place in my county. He was rather old. He'd been to, like, every election in a row for about 53 years, and he cast his vote and then moments later died. But that, see, that's also the problem. When your entire civic system is based on people who are just dying off, I mean, I know this sounds cruel to say about older voters, but I mean, that's the reality. A 4-year term, my father was only 59. He didn't live to see the re-election campaign for Obama. He died a few weeks after. He was only 59. So when you're sending these people in their 70s, 80s, and 90s to decide your elections, that's also weak because some of them might literally the day of not even make it to the poll. So all the more reason the younger demographic has to show up more than every 4 years, but especially maybe this year. But, you know, my whole election is going to be next year, an off-election year. I could probably carry two precincts in this township without a problem, but I'm going to have, you know, I'm going to have to do what I have to do to win possibly in a poor turnout of my own party election next year. So we'll see how that works out. But that's the reality, too, is, you know, it's great everyone's getting energized and talked up for this election, but can some of you young people kind of hang around for a year after? Maybe the year after that? Because I have to tell you, I'm getting a little tired of at these county committee meetings at the age of 32, this September I'll be 33, being the young guy in the room. My hair's going gray. I shouldn't have people looking at me.
Listen,
as a young
guy. There are places I go, and I don't mean to depress you or anything, Spike. I'm not a spring chicken, but I'm also not 1 foot in the grave and one on a banana peel either.
Yeah.
There are places I go where I'm the young guy, and I'm 49.
Yeah. I was gonna say you're not even in your 50s quite yet. Yeah. Well, that's kind of scary that people in their 30s and 40s are like the young crowd in the world of politics. I mean. This isn't poker clubs.
This isn't spaghetti at the VFW.
Yeah, this isn't Saturday night at the State College VFW, you know? There should be some young people showing up to these things. I saw a lot in 2010. Our senatorial and congressional races drew some young people. Expect not only the presidential election this year, but I know at least in my congressional district, Matt Cartwright has a pretty loyal following of young guys and women who really, really believe in him and want to see him in Congress. So that's good too. But again, that creates a problem for me that, you know, I'm just a local municipal election year and a county election year. The smallest races with money and funds and even coverage areas, but yet local elections are the most important of all elections because they directly affect everyone's lives because it's your local community, and that's the problem. I'm getting tired of the right wing winning all of that.
Yeah, no doubt.
You know, that directly affects my life every day. You know, no one shows up for my governor's race, most of the Commonwealth. Well, sad day for us. We got Tom Corbett, although not like Dan Honorato was a good option either. That was a terrible nomination. That's a whole nother story.
Yeah, no kidding. No kidding. That was the devil in the deep blue sea.
That was effed if you do and effed if you don't election for that year. There was really no good options at all. I don't even think there was even like a Green Party candidate you could have chosen from. It was like those two or a Libertarian. And the Pennsylvania Libertarian Party is about as kooky as they get. I mean, kookier than even the National Libertarian Party. We had a guy in 2002 who was running for governor against Ed Rendell. I forget who that year the Republican was off the top of my head. He only ran once. Michael Morrow, who's a big guy now in the Democratic circles here of progressives, was the Green Party candidate. The Libertarian candidate, every candidate had a chance to ask someone a question. Libertarian candidate asks a question that just keeps going on and on and on, runs over his time limit for the question. Finally, they get him to say who he's asking his question to, and he was asking it to himself. And then he answered his own question. So, I mean, that's like... like lunatic fringe galore. That's a guy talking to himself in a political debate.
Yeah, muttering. The cranky old man with a gun that muttering. Cranky old man with a loaded gun sitting at the end of the bar muttering to himself. That is the Libertarian Party.
Yeah, I mean, and that makes Russ Perot's former running mate in the vice presidential debates look a heck of a lot better.
Yeah, why am I here? Yeah, I remember that.
But yeah, that's just the sad reality is we need people involved all the time, and just more young people too. But I guess if you're trained from an early age that nothing matters and it's all corrupt, then why even get involved in the first place? I don't know. I think maybe what we should require for education in Pennsylvania is that George Carlin and Bill Hicks specials be played for these kids. And then they can learn the real things about the owners of our society, that Limbaugh's a scat muncher. You know, the important things we should be teaching our children.
Randy Pan, Goat Boy. Yeah.
Yeah. None of this Dane Cook crap. Let's give them Carlin. I think George Carlin should be taught in every philosophy 101 college course as well. You want to talk about Socrates, Plato, talk about George Carlin. Because there was no greater American philosopher than Carlin. He could wipe his ass with Ayn Rand, I might add.
Oh, well, but why would he want to?
With that too.
That hatchet face thing, you'd carve new hemorrhoids doing that.
You're better off using European toilet paper mixed with some very grainy sandpaper.
Don't get me started.
I love the European toilet paper, I might add.
It's crepe paper.
That's what I love about it, man. You use less of it and you're done quick, cleaner, soft, harder job.
Jesus, Spike, the place
I'm
is weak.
I'm an advocate of European toilet paper as someone who has a tendency for a health condition to frequently need paper.
Got it. We will leave it at that.
Exactly.
All right. Spike, thanks a million, buddy.
And no problem. And real quick, just a big shout-out to the guy who passed away today in the Poconos. His name's Tie-Dye Dave, kind of a local celebrity hippie guy. Died waiting to have heart surgery. So.
Oh, God.
Kind of big deal amongst the local hippies.
Well, you know, it's interesting you would mention that because the Kaiser Family Foundation...
Yeah.
Has a new study out. You know, this is another one of those pictures of that free market America that Willard Romney loves so much, Spike. It turns out that 58% of American people needing health insurance. Now, that's not 58% of people who don't have health insurance. That's not 58% of people who don't have health insurance. That's 58% of Americans did not get medical help in the last year when they needed it solely as a result of the crippling costs of trying to do so.
Yeah, well.
and that's up from 50%, which is not an inspiring number, less than a year ago.
Yeah, I needed to deal with health issues for quite some time the past few years. The list
is as follows. Americans, they didn't go to the doctor. They didn't go to the dentist. They didn't get diagnostic tests. You know, the ones that the right wing say that are so overprescribed. They didn't take their medicine. They cut their pills in half. And they did other things, the Kaiser Family Foundation notes, just to try to save a dime. Just to try to not have their families crippled by medical costs.
Yeah, well,
and I know a little bit about this because, you know, Agnes had to drag me kicking and screaming the last time when I got stuck in the hospital over my guts.
Yeah.
And now I've got an $8,000 bill I can't pay.
Yeah, well,
it's $10 a month for the rest of my life.
I had the same deal with an ulcer condition. And ended up with about $4,500 worth of debt because I had to get scanned. Wouldn't stop bleeding. Had to see what was going on. $4,500. And worst of all, the company, whatever you want to classify them as, at the hospital, hooked me up with which helped me get assistance. Totally dropped the ball, didn't do anything, and then played dumb and said, oh, we didn't send you an application. Yeah, thanks, asses. Yeah, you know, now you caused me to go into a collection to get my credit screwed up because you didn't do
right.
your part that you.
And consider that this study also notes that, for instance, an American family of four, you know, mom, dad, mom, dad, two kids, that have health insurance, are going to spend in a year $20,000 for it, and they still don't go to the doctor because the copays and deductibles are so godforsaken high.
Yeah, well, that's true too. I had health coverage when I worked for Tiffany and Company, and you know it was still expensive to get it.
81% of the uninsured said they did not get medical treatment that they needed. 81% of the uninsured. That's 19% that said, well, it's just they were either unconscious and taken to the hospital, or they said, you know, I'll pay $10 a month for the rest of my life.
Yeah.
If I can get the $10. It's
yeah,
stunning. It is stunning. And the only response that the right wing has, Spike, is to say, free market will solve them problems.
Yeah, free market, my ass. And not to mention these health care costs are mixed in also for many, these possible health care costs, with also, if you want to be educated, that's another incredible amount of debt you might have to get yourself into. So, God help you if you want to be educated and healthy at the same time. I mean, that's another dilemma I'm going through right now because it cuts my state Pell Grant.
Yeah, don't go to law school, Spike, because you'll get one of them $10,000 a year lawyering jobs.
Yeah, if even that sometimes.
Right, exactly. Jesus, so. Good to talk to you.
Yeah, same here, man.
All right, you take care, Spike. Hang in there.
You too.
Bye now. Our good buddy Spike calling from Pennsylvania. 27 minutes past the hour, a little bit of time left for conversation on this Tuesday edition of The Horn. And a reminder, you know, I give out the phone numbers from time to time, 877-443-2366, 877, the numeral 4, add on. But now that we have it here and available to us, I need to make a point of giving out the Skype handle. Because if you want to reach out and reach the program via Skype, you can do that. That number is, well, it's not a number. It's just Bob Kincaid Horn, BobKincaidHorn, no capitals, all lowercase. I want to go back to something Andy said a little bit ago. He sent an email in responding to Steve Allman's piece in the New York Times Magazine. He said the problem is the discourse. The common ground has been moved so far to the right, I have no other choice but to walk away. My issues, point of view, and desires have absolutely no validity in their far, far to the right neoliberal policy paradise, where the conversation starts with, we want and get it all. Now, how do you like the crumbs on the ground? For goodness sakes, says Andy, I have almost nothing in common, no common ground, with Blue Dog DLC third wave Clintonista Democrats. I can't penetrate the corporate media conversation, nor do I want to. It's about what will benefit the 1%, and somehow this will trickle down to the 99%, and we know that's baloney. And yet, having said that, I know from the conversations we've had with Andy, that he's still out there working for issues. He's out there working for candidates. He's been calling and doing advocacy work for the ACAC with his member of Congress. It's the difference between recognizing the nature of the illness and trying to deal with it and pretending that there is none. And Mr. Allman, unfortunately, seems to think that he, as a liberal, is the one who has the disease. I mean, the headline, Liberals are ruining America, and I should know, I am one. Maybe that was said tongue-in-cheek, but it didn't. But reading the rest of the article didn't feel terribly tongue-in-cheek. It felt rather earnest. We're not the ones who control the dialogue. We are not the ones who control the media. And we are struggling to hang on to what little bit we have. But suddenly we're the ones who are supposed to be doing the navel gazing when we ought to be, when we damned well ought to be out there in the struggle, out of our seats, and in the streets. To the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hey, afternoon, Brother Bob.
Brother Albert, what's happening?
Well, it sounds like that navel gaze is trying to out Brooks Brooks. What's going on with that? Who's he talking about? Who's he talking to? That's, I love the false equivalencies. I love it when quote unquote liberals embrace these false equivalencies. Like, yeah, we're just as bad. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, you know, we scare people with our.
Yeah, with environmentalisms and.
Our global climate catastrophe, and we want to use those liberal code words like sea level rise.
Yeah, I know. The false equivalencies are endless. If sea level rise, our whole mission in life is to perform abortions on a daily basis. How many did you get today?
13.
Yeah, 13. I only got 4. So.
Yeah, God. Yeah, okay. You got some catching up to do.
I'm not getting my stirrup pin. Nope, not this month.
Nope.
You know, it
stirrup pin.
You know,
Jesus, Albert.
Sorry, it's the golden liberal stirrup pin, you know.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, that way we have some of us liberals like you, you know, you have full chest panels that go down to your knee.
You're right.
Oh, Brother Bob,
they can cause crippling neck strain just carrying them.
You need a little dolly. But for real, I'm tired of the circular firing squad. We're all shooting inside. This is ridiculous. This is ridiculous. What do you mean it's our fault? What are you talking about? Who? Oh, shut up, Brooks. That guy's a day little Brooks. That's what he is, that guy.
And the whole thing proceeded from his telling the story about how he got all angry and got in and wrote something and got invited on Hannity. And, you know, Hannity, he was promised 10 minutes, and he got 4, and Hannity spent all of it bloviating over whether he voted for John Kerry. And so he reached the conclusion that it's not smart to go on Sean Hannity, which is the right conclusion, Brother Albert.
Amen.
But you don't extrapolate the rest of that from that mistake. Somebody's got to wave a hand between the eyeballs and the navel and look up.
I think it's time that, you know, just especially with how much has been focused on it by the Horn family, maybe we need to direct his attention in a more positive direction and introduce him to the Horn. You know, Van Jones is in on it. And, you know,
hey, Van.
And a couple others. Hey, Van, how you doing, buddy? But at the same time, you know, come on in. Come on here. Come on. Come on. We welcome you. We'll welcome you. We'll welcome you. Come on in. We are not the problem. We are not the ones that, you know, say no to stimulus, say no to jobs bills, say no to this, say no to that.
No to teachers. We're not the ones who say no to putting the fire out while it is burning the house down.
Yeah, and then I saw a political cartoon, I really liked it today, and that was basically it, with Obama showing these, you know, this elephant with his arms crossed. And then, you know, he says, you know, deny, you know, veto, no to, that Obama says no to the, Keystone Pipeline, and of course the Republicans, job killer, and it, you know, and I don't know if you saw that, there was a, you know, the some river out in Canada, Elkhorn River, some Red Knee River, what have you, it's taking jobs from us. It took 440 liters of oil as the that oil just, you know, the pipeline burst, and, you know, the river just taking our jobs. This river's taking our jobs.
Is that one of them? Is that one of them liberal job destroying rivers?
Yeah, it is one of them. We should fill it in with some mountaintop. We'll fill it in. And
that'll show that river.
Our jobs. Liberal rivers bending this way and that way. No real backbone.
Well, why should we be surprised? The oceans are apparently liberal, too, you know, what with that sea level rise and everything.
Amen. And, you know, and without the acidification, you know, the acid, you know, that was what them liberals were doing back in the 60s, all that acid in the ocean. They just don't, it just...
Oh, God, if we couldn't laugh, we'd be so screwed.
Hey, sense of humor will get us a long way. Sense of humor gets us a long way. It's all we got. Yeah, Spike is right. We need more George Carlin. We need more Bill Hicks. We need a lot, you know. We need these people to start listening to this crap and stop listening to the other crap. You know, listen to something that makes sense. 2 + 2 isn't 5, you fools. Everyone knows this. My children know this. Everyone knows this. It's so easy. Stop it. Just stop. And that's what they're ceaseless. They're ceaseless. And half of these people, I think, get paid. That's right.
Well, you know, and you remind me of something because, well, you always do. Don't you sometimes, hey, Gonzo, don't you sometimes wish that we had some on our side in the Congress with a sense of humor? Wouldn't you love to see the introduction of the American Electrolyte Act?
Is there one of those, Bob?
I don't know. Let's work up a catchy acronym. Saving plants and saving together in common, the Spastic Electrolyte Act.
Yeah, SPATS. Yeah, we'll give it the SPATS. You know, and then, with the act here that you know, you have us writing about to our congressman, they don't care about any of that. Man, we're in Wisconsin. I deal with Wisconsin issues. Although, you know, pollution is a problem, blah, 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 blah.
Well, you know, the nice thing, though, is that mountaintop removal, well, it's not nice. It's just a reality. Mountaintop removal has come to Wisconsin.
Yep.
And yep. The same poisons that go into our water here are going into y'all's there because they're using the same explosives.
Yep. They're just getting iron.
No, sand.
Oh, sand too, yeah, sand too, and salt, you know, but iron. Iron has been a big one.
Yeah, iron too, absolutely.
Yeah, they really, I think, you know, iron. Iron rates are up 35%, chocolate rations down 11%, but,
news at 12.
I know. Yeah, well, you know, sometimes that's what I feel like, you know, when I hear the news, you know, it's like, oh, job numbers are terrible. That's 69,000 or whatever it has, you know, yeah, right, it's not great, but...
That's 69,000 more jobs than were ever created during the entire presidency of George W. Bush. Not that I'm counting or anything.
Yeah, you know, come on. Every time, yeah. I mean, I don't even let that. That drives me nuts. I can't stand it. How is that terrible? 750,000 a month lost. That's terrible. I don't know. I mean, maybe it was so terrible you have post-traumatic stress and you can't remember it. But that's what it feels like sometimes. That people just. You want to go back to Bush? For real? You think that would... What? Really? Oh, okay. All right. Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah, brought to you by Carl's Jr. Yeah, I know. That's where it's at. That's where... That, it's,
water?
It's water. Like in the toilet? What for? And he's a doctor.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
I mean, it's sad. You know, I mean, you know, I've actually been hearing, you know, I say it as a, you know, and it does, it scrambles my brain when I say more better or more betterist or something like that, you know, but it's kind of funny to me, but at the same time, it's bad for you. Don't do it, kids, because, you know, sometimes you, if you haven't seen the film, don't repeat it.
No.
Don't repeat it till you see it.
Yeah, what is the official phrase? It was, they spoke in English that was a...
Oh, a cross between hillbilly and ghetto slang and clicks and grunts.
Yeah, hillbilly ghetto slang accented with clicks and grunts.
We already do it. That's what I mean. It's just so funny. But you got to watch. You got to see it. You know?
Oh, I know. I do that with my kids because, you know, I play with the language and I say done went and things like that. Don't. Until you are a master of the language, don't do that.
Exactly. Hey, you know, and speaking of master of things, you reminded me. I actually picked up a newspaper and I was looking through some restaurant equipment and stuff. And
There's a, get your concealed carry permit. The 2 to 3 hour class. $70. 2 to 3 hour class. if you're all smart, you want to shoot them, them pussies. Oh, sorry, excuse my language. You want to shoot them, wimpy liberals and blah, 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 blah.
It goes the full 3 hour if you want to use the holler points. The exploding ones that blast open police armor and such like.
Oh, yeah, that's right.
Got to be extra careful with them.
Yeah, you want to get them sabot rounds going. Yeah. 2 hours? 3 hours? 3 hours?
But see, that's so American because, again, going back to my epic journey, we're howling along. Not howling. We were driving comfortably down the Autobahn. A delightful experience.
Yeah, sounds lovely.
I'd like to do that with me behind the wheel sometime.
Get insurance there. It's a little high.
Yeah, right. But we talked about what it takes to get... Because everybody was behaving quite well on the Autobahn. There wasn't somebody with Ohio plates, 900 yards up the road going slow in the left lane.
No combines.
No yahoos zipping around trucks in the middle lane to pass them on the right. All those things that make American interstates such an absolute delightful exercise in taking one's life in one's own hands. And we had this conversation about what it takes to get a driver's license. And so one of my new friends said, well, Bob, I had to study for a very long time. I had to take classes, and I had to save up every penny I had for every part-time job for 3 years to finally have enough money to get my driver's license. What's it like over there? And I said, well, you go to the Department of Motor Vehicles. You pass a written test that's written on a second-grade level. You take the test on a computer. Then you get in the car with a member of the DMV, and if they come back alive, you get your driver's license for $35.
Bob, can I just say about the second grade reading level? Sometimes it's written so simple, it's confusing.
And sometimes it's not even second grade. Sometimes it's the menu at the Idiocracy Hospital, the one with all the symbols on it.
It's that, or, if you have 5 buckets and you give 3 buckets, how many buckets do you have?
I want all the buckets.
The square peg and goes in the oval.
Officer material.
Friendly, oh, he's so smart.
And so my new friends were just kind of looking at me with, what? Yeah. And it's the same thing. Controlled carry permit, just go down to Cletus's, buy yourself a shooting gun, get you some bullets, and come on up here to the range, and 2 hours later you'll be ready to conceal it and carry it anywhere you want to, and defend Walmart from the Muslims.
What are they shooting? Empty tin cans on a fence post? If you hit, you're done. You're out of here.
Right.
I mean, and
they got their Barack Obama silhouette target. And
shooting bags of Skittles. We're gonna shoot Skittles today.
I mean, I saw this in the chat room before the show, as the show was starting. Arizona cop who encouraged shooting Obama claims it is a victimless crime. An Arizona police officer by the name of Pat Shearer, he posted a photograph of an Obama t-shirt riddled with bullet holes, and he says that he should not be convicted under the crime of encouraging violence against the president because it is a victimless crime. They were holding up the bullet-riddled Obama T-shirt with the caption, "Another trip to the ranch." He was Sergeant Shearer was demoted, and he now works the midnight shift. And he had got a 2-week suspension
with pay.
Of course.
Oh.
He said, I was an idiot for putting it on Facebook, but to have all the pluses in my career forgotten over this one incident, which harmed no one, I think, is taking things too far.
Okay. Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, and, well,
people that think the, you know, the ELF sitting in trees on mountaintop removal sites, you know, they're the biggest terrorist organization in America.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. They're chaining themselves. You know, they lit a fire. Oh, da, 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 da. Did anyone die? Oh, no. It was victimless. Leave them alone. You know, they don't ever want to play that other edge. But, yeah, don't you love it? It's victimless. Oh, yeah, more wood in the fire. Oh, how many commercials we need? Oh, now we need police showing. You know, come on.
Right. You build your barbecue fire. It's not as hot as you'd like. So you go and you squirt some more Gulf Light on it. And it roars up, but it doesn't burn your eyebrows off, so it's a victimless crime, even though you caught the tree on fire and it burned to the ground.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. As long as
I ain't nobody actually took a shot at him or nothing. It was a victimless crime.
Oh, yeah. He's only the most, they've released that, right? That he's the most,
threatened president in the history of the United States? Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, we've seen hate groups, rise up like, you know, someone put Miracle-Gro and, you know, Ready Seed. It's all over the place. As soon as he got elected, right, we've seen people, they were going to kill 88 of them black people, and he was going to be the 88th.
Yeah, I remember that one.
Yeah, it's endless. It's endless. It's just ceaseless with this. And I'm so sick of it. Where do we go, though? First Amendment. Thank you. Come on. Is that First Amendment?
No.
I mean, 2 hours to carry a freaking gun? 2 hours? Shouldn't it be 2 hours a month?
Well, that's as much time as it takes to watch a good gun-toting movie's 2 hours, and you learn a lot in one of them. This is two... No, see, Albert, this is two more hours.
Oh, no.
I mean, I got 2 hours watching Dirty Harry, Magnum Force. I got 2 hours watching Killer Lee. I got 2 hours watching Death Wish. I got 2 hours watching
Mechanic.
Right.
Yeah.
And then I got to do 2 more hours.
Don't forget your hand-to-hand combat with under fire and under siege, enemy of the state.
Jesus, the hunter's safety class that I took 3 nights here.
Wow. Amazing. Yeah. Well, you're only hunting people.
Two nights of instruction and 1 night of test.
Mm-hmm. You just sneak right up to a people. They won't even know you. They won't even pay attention to you.
No, because they're used to them.
Yeah.
It's just like the Galapagos Islands.
They're acclimated.
They are acclimated. Don't say those words around the girls, Albert.
Oh, they're tough sometimes. Just getting them out the right way, with the right spin on it. It just never ends. We kind of have some Stockholm syndrome going on, and we need to stop it. We need to understand that we're
yeah, and you know the answer is not to stop noticing how godforsaken hateful the other side is.
And that's there is no equivalency. I mean, your point about the hours, you know, we're talking thousands of hours versus every liberal voice on. I mean, come on, it's not even it's ridiculous. It's a horde. It's just a horde. How are liberals? Who point to them? Who? Who is this? Who are we worried about now? Mr. Noam Chomsky, who's 89 years old, and, you know, they keep dragging him out. I can't feel like I want him to have a rest, but he's got the fire, so he keeps going. Who else? Michael Moore every now and then. Who else? I mean, what, we're losing in the government? Who? Who? Bernie Sanders? Who else? You know, a couple girls here and there, a couple guys here and there. You know, they don't just roll off my tongue, but, you know, I didn't know these people were national news. I didn't know that our side even had a voice half the time. You know,
well, it's like, you know, he hasn't been consistently what you would call a liberal or progressive, but Dylan Radigan's walking away from MSNBC.
Mm. Oh, Chris Hayes. Chris Hayes is good.
Yeah.
I like Chris Hayes. He's
I like Rachel.
Yeah, Rachel, too. Oh, I love Rachel. I mean, you know, and Dylan Radigan, you know. He kind of seemed like he... I don't know what he's doing. Who knows? We'll see.
Well, it was interesting, though, when announcing his departure from MSNBC, he said something like, I can either go on doing what I'm doing, or I can go out there and put the things I've been talking about into practice, and I'm doing the latter.
Good. Good. We need it. Yeah, we'll see. You know, I've heard a couple of good things. He's a lot less crazy than some people out there. You know, he does it.
Well, they had to move him off CNBC.
Yeah, he was getting there, wasn't he? He started out not so much, but he evolved. He's one of those that has the light switch on. He's got the door open, at least the screen door, you know?
Yeah. By the way, noting in the chat room here, Cowgirl said Hunter's safety, and she's in North Dakota. At least when I teach, it is 5 nights, including testing and a field day to do actual shooting. No shortcuts, period. 6 days total. So I guess I got away with something.
Yeah, I mean, heck, just come on over to Wisconsin. You can be hunting people. 2 hours.
With a handgun in 2 hours.
With a handgun, 2 hours, concealed. You know, concealed. Hidden in your little Magnum PI bikini brief. Gun holster.
With the little Velcro bullet pocket.
Yeah.
Dun, 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 dun. Now if I could just get me a 2-hour class to learn how to fly that helicopter and drive that Ferrari.
Grown out with a mustache. Just for men gray. They got that for the mustache now. It's a big deal.
Oh, it is. It's a big deal.
I don't even know why. It's so sad. So vain. It's just shallow. I don't
Sandra,
know anybody.
Sandra just wrote in, Chomsky's an anarchist.
Ah, that's true, too.
So, yeah. We can't count. We can't count him.
I know. Who do we got? Who? I want to hear. I'd love to know. Rachel, we already mentioned some of them, you know. But you know.
But we're talking about media people. I mean, who's out there? Who's out there leading the damn fight? Because the media people can't lead the fight.
No.
Because if they're on our side and they lead the fight, they wind up getting suspended. Or fired.
Or fired. Or yeah, it just. Yeah, well, I'd like to think we're wise and we're hip to it at least. And you tell other people, and you know, I mean, you know, I know that you and everyone who listens to the horn, you know, to the people that they know, that they probably, a lot of people get their news from you. I mean, you know, I know a lot of people get their news from me. I know a lot of people call me up and say, hey, what's going on? Oh, did you read? Because they know I pay attention. And they know I sit there and I read it. And I'll talk to them, you know, and we'll talk about it, you know. And there's some people that, you know, they do that. So, you know, don't give up. And, you know, don't hate the media too much. Become the media. You know,
yeah.
You know, we are on the Internet nowadays. You know?
Catapult to propaganda.
Catapult to propaganda. Or just, you know, just try to, you know, ask for sources when you're hearing talking to people. You'd be amazed how quickly they unwind. You know, no, you want a source? Here's WorldNet Daily right there. It's WorldNet Daily.
I mean, they couldn't call it that if it wasn't that.
That's right. I'll go back to Stormfront, you friggin' freak. And you know, everyone's seen these people. And you know, they're there. And their voice is as loud as you, so it's up to you to use facts. You know? I mean, heck, I can't really even think a whole lot of media that I even watch anymore, other than the shows we had mentioned and clips here and there. You know, I don't have the stomach to listen to Bill O'Reilly anymore. I don't. I just can't do it. He just is too aggravating. It makes me want to.
I can't. You know, on the TV box, just clickety 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 clickety. I'm forever forgetting where Fox is. So, you know, oh shit. Click. No, I don't have patience. I don't have the patience for not one nanosecond. I don't have the patience for the time it takes for the screen to go blank and go to the next channel.
Yes, sir.
Which, as it turns out, is headline news, and 99% of the times that means it's like Nancy Grace. Oh!
Oh, God. But for real, I mean, what do they say that you... That, I mean, just simple... Just having a sharp logic knife in your pocket is enough. You don't even need to know facts. You can just listen to them, and you already know the argument because it's the same argument that you defeated 20 years ago, or you talked about, you know, whenever. Yeah, it's the same things from these people constantly, and it's so easy to show them how wrong they are because, well, hell, you know Fox, they're nonstop lies. Nonstop. You know, don't tell me there's an equivalency. You know,
no.
Rachel Maddow doesn't lie like that. She doesn't. And if she makes a tiny little...
And I'm sorry, citing the Huffington Post as the liberal outpost. Spare me. Just got a note in from Jim who said, you know, I took a trip to Wisconsin once. He said, while driving to La Crosse, I met a farmer who spray painted his cows to prevent hunters from Chi-Town from shooting them.
Yeah.
Wouldn't surprise me.
No.
You know, paint them that same hunter, you know, hunter orange. Oh, yeah. They're wearing a vest. I can't shoot at it. Damn.
Yeah.
Slow elk. Slow elk.
Yeah.
I know. I know, Brother Albert. Good to hear from you.
Always, Brother Bob. You take care, and we'll talk later.
Absolutely. Work on, put a little more into your efforts for your stirrup pin tomorrow, will you?
I'll try.
I mean, you got to be in the competition.
Yes, comrade. You're right.
All right. Later. Bye now.
Fine.
Brother Albert, the sage of Southwest Wisconsin. Email coming in from Reverbo with regard to Steve Almond. He said, you read this guy's argument and think how reasonable it all sounds, and then You read this guy's argument and think how reasonable it all sounds, and then ask, yeah, but what good is all this when the forces of evil are ready to spend $1 billion to shut you up every time you try to open your mouth? You think the Koch brothers would go away if no one were paying attention to them? They took over the country when no one was paying attention to them. Great moments in Reverbo. You think the Koch brothers would go away if no one were paying attention to them? They took over the country when no one was paying attention to them. Yes, he continues, somebody on the left has to come up with a better idea than hippies toasting marshmallows on the courthouse lawn. But then you have the problem that when a large and diverse population of free individuals are pitted against a small number of billionaire Vladimir Putin wannabes, the latter have a much easier time maintaining an organized attack than the former. So indeed, what are you going to do? What are you going to do? On your feet and into the street. It's the only kind of an answer I've got. Thanks, everybody, for a wonderful evening. I really appreciate it. Thanks for your continued support for what we do here. We could not continue to do what we do here without your continued support. We did not raise our evening's $100, so maybe tomorrow we'll raise $200. Hopefully. Thanks to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to Lottie and Sparky in the chat room, our news ninjas, Gene and Susan. Thank you to Texas Betsy. Thank you to Reverbo. Thank you to John for all that he does to keep all the lights flashing and equipment behaving. And websiting. Thanks for the decade-long effort of Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org. There is only a stream here because of Ben. It's that simple. And finally, thanks to the hardest working, bravest people I know, the folks at Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net, and StopTheAche.org. Go there, learn about the AIC Act, learn about this life-changing legislation that is about to drop in the House of Representatives. And always, 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 Gina, Judy, it's all for you. Rick Smith is next, only on the Horn.